Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, August 23rd, 2012. And a lot of interesting topics tonight. I'm going to start out talking about a company called Best Buy. We probably have all purchased something there at one time in our lives. Electronics, and of course, electronics is the one remaining business in the United States. If you look at the, oh, just the business chatter, as it were, you'll see that they talk about iPhones, they talk about, you know, the little tablets, reading tablets. They talk about all of the electronic sales, and this should be a support industry. This should be a little teeny kind of pimple on the side of a major industry, the communications. It's something you do to help you communicate. It's like a road. It's like other forms of assistance with businesses. So, but when the communications, the sales of communications equipment becomes your largest industry in the country, then you've got a problem, and the spiral is going down. But those, Best Buy, of course, was at the center of the electronics industry, catering to basically home and business electronics. A lot of small businesses buy their electronics equipment from the Best Buy. But Best Buy is not doing well. Not only is it not doing well, it's really crashing and burning. It's odd to see that this is not announced in the news at all, the happy news, where everybody's happy and there's no problems. But it's indicative of the economy in its final last throes. That's what else could you say? It's but the general acknowledgement of this. Let's look at something that's rather comical. I believe in the last quarter, Best Buy made $170 million or something, which of course was way below their average quarterly profits or whatever. Mitt Romney, a Republican candidate for president, makes $700 million a year. So he makes personally more than Best Buy. Isn't that interesting? So, you know, these people have no contact with you, the general public. They have no clue what it's like to be somebody out here. It's not worth talking about the presidential elections. These people are completely out of touch with anybody. But the Best Buy story, basically the reason I'm mentioning it here is because I searched all over the news trying to find a real story on it, and it's I didn't find one. I didn't find it. Here's a major company which should be at the core of the communications and support industry, and it's crashing and burning. So anyway, it's just a sign that the end is very, very near. A quick mention, and a very quick mention only, on the Mars rover Curiosity. Today they announced in the news, it's not even laughable, it's so pathetic. They're going to start to move it 40 foot per day. That's a big step for this spacecraft. 2,000 pounds up on Mars. It's going to move 40 feet. I hope you're not all waiting with bated breath to see what it sees up there. But I believe I mentioned this before. You look out over Mars, and from the initial photos that were sent back, and it looks like the Southwest Desert in the United States. All the rocks around, you look off in the distance at the distant hills, and they are rounded, all due to extensive, not just a little bit, but extensive water erosion. These things happen because of water erosion. In Mars in general, I talk about this all the time, shows recent water erosion. I went to a International Scientific Conference that concentrated on Mars, Mars orbiting pictures. There were some new high-resolution photographs of Mars. And all they talked about was the very recent water, the water erosion on Mars. But, of course, the standard story is that this happened billions of years ago, and the geologists were very emphatic that this is all extremely recent. In other words, within 10,000 years, maximum 10,000 years. But these are geologists. Geologists tend to be a bit more factual because they have a lot of Earth geology to compare to. So when they're dealing with Mars, and Mars has similar traits as Earth geology, and we know that those are recent, and they can be erased very quickly. Geologists know that the water activity on Mars is recent, and that's why they put this Mars Curiosity rover off in the middle of nowhere where it can't do any damage. And by the way, it's not the only thing on Mars. If you think this is the maximum best technology that we can put on Mars, no, no. They've got a lot of stuff up there. This is the tier two garbage science that they pawn off on the public. And I can't say that enough times. Just a little bit of a solar and weather update. We have Tropical Storm Isaac churning off of Florida. They say it will become a hurricane momentarily. Possibly it is by the time this show is airing. But the sun itself is relatively calm. All of the solar indicators, all of the things you would look at to monitor the sun, all of them show a very calm and collected sun. So not a lot going on. So why do we have a hurricane developing in a hurricane season that has been little to nothing at best? We've had a couple minor tropical storms, but that's it. So all of a sudden we have in August, of course, this is the peak hurricane month, and we have one storm that's struggling to become a hurricane. And if you look at the solar wind, which left the sun and is traveling by Earth, we're in a turbulent part of the solar wind, and it looks like we're exiting the August return current sheet early, which is kind of interesting. Typically, that current sheet can run anywhere up into October, where the Earth is passing through this extended snaking current sheet. It's the return current from the outer nebular ion cloud that comes back to the sun, balancing the solar system electrical circuit, so to speak. But Earth moves through this about in the month of August. But it appears that we are moving out of this right now, and it's not even the end of August yet. So it looks like that current sheet had moved a bit. All of the indicators, the way you see that on the solar monitoring satellites, is that the dynamic pressure in the solar wind goes to zero and it just stays there. In other words, the pressure of the solar wind coming off the sun is just not there. Yet you still have solar wind type of activity. Well, what's going on? The electrical current in our local environment here at Earth is in the other direction. So the detector, nobody, of course, thought at NASA to put a detector that could turn around or see the protons coming from the other direction. So the one that's fixed and pointed towards the sun only sees protons coming from the sun, and they're not there. They're just their count. There might be a few protons, but basically everything's moving the other way. And NASA, of course, in typical NASA style, doesn't know anything about it and never could imagine it because, gee, they couldn't be wrong. But at any rate, what we're in now is a very turbulent solar wind. And you can see this on the daily solar wind real-time data, especially the changing magnetic field and the wind speed, the solar wind speed. Also, the dynamic pressure is starting to kick up and show values greater than 0.1 or less than 0.1. So all of those components and the somewhat wildly changing magnetic field of the solar wind, which directly affects our Earth magnetic field, all of those things are changing very rapidly. And as I explain in my weather book, it's the rapid change in the solar wind conditions that can drive storm systems down at planet Earth, down at the surface. So that's why we're seeing a little bit of hurricane activity this year in what I predicted would be a zero year, and my prediction has been right on. I would be surprised if we see much hurricane activity from here on. There's just not enough change, not enough rapid change. And, of course, those things can alter at any moment. But those are the current conditions. We're just about to the end of August. And so by now we should have had major hurricanes, if it were going to be any kind of hurricane season at all. And I bet the guys at NOAA, the Hurricane Prediction Center, are glad they bowed out of this prediction business, because they would have had mud all over their face this year. Because they always had to say that, oh, this is going to be an above average hurricane year, just to get people interested, to make it sound like something was going to happen so they could get their paychecks. Okay, at any rate, a couple stories here. Here's an interesting one, and I wish I had more time to deal with this on the air, but this is actually from the trenches, worldreport.com. It's called Proof Bar Attorneys Are Agents of a Foreign Power. And so it's something that's really, I think everybody should read this. It's HTTP, there's no www, it's just From the Trenches World Report, just like it sounds, .com. This particular article, Proof Bar Attorneys Are Agents of a Foreign Power. And it's really interesting, the manipulation that has gone on both in the legal profession and with judges. All of this unconstitutional, it's just become a monopoly. And I know this for a fact, that most attorneys know this. Go and ask an attorney in an office, go in for a consultation. They'll usually give you half an hour free, a lot of them. Go in and sit down and talk to them a little bit, and then in the middle, ask them a question that deals with constitutional law. And most of them will look at you like they don't want to talk about this, because they know that they don't belong in a constitutional country. They're working for someone else, and they're there. They're able to make their money. They're able to create their monopoly because of something that's totally illegal. Anyway, I'm not going to go on about that. There are other people covering that topic. Just a heads up, something good for you to read. Last week on my show, I talked about a disease or an infection called C. diff. And this is a really bad situation in the United States. People in healthcare facilities, elderly care facilities, child care facilities, all levels of healthcare facilities in the United States. And this is a problem that is current in the United States. It doesn't exist in other countries because they're conscientious about cleaning their hospitals. But in the United States, it's a financial issue. And so hospitals, to save money, hospitals are profit centers, they don't clean their hospital rooms. They're spending 50% of the time on a bed in hospital facility. And this is something you get when you go to a hospital or a clinic. I'm always afraid to go in these places. You walk in and it's like disease central. You are going to get more diseases than you're going to be cured of. But anyway, this week I wanted to read some of these articles. And of course, I'll be brief because I'll tell you where this is. It's an article from August 16th issue of USA Today. But I just wanted to read a couple of these so that it would direct you to go and look into this yourself and beware of going into clinics and hospitals. Here's one, Bob Stegeman. I'm just reading these are examples. They've got about a dozen examples of people who have contracted C. diff infection in a hospital and then died from it. Here's a guy named Bob Stegeman of Rhode Island, died at 76 in 2006. The father of four, longtime baker, Korean War veteran, and car buff, was diagnosed with C. diff after having neck surgery. He had multiple complications, including a ruptured colon, and died about 6 months later. Here's another one. A woman, Regina Mulligan of New York, died at 83 in July 2008. The mother of six was diagnosed with C. diff while recovering from heart surgery. Her condition wavered for weeks after doctors said she was improving. Her daughters began making homecoming plans. She died 2 days later. Here's a baby, Charlie McKenzie Ratliff. Charlie of California was 8 months old when she died in May 2010. She was diagnosed with C. diff while recovering from surgery to repair a hole in her heart. She died 95 days later after severe complications led doctors to remove part of her colon. So this affects people's digestive tracts. And so I'm not going to read any more of these. It's just an example of a man, a woman, and a baby who died in the hospital of they had other types of surgery or care at the hospital, ended up dying from this infection. So once again, just a quick reference, August 16th, 2012, the USA Today, that daily paper that circulates around the U.S., and I think people should go and search that out. Okay, tonight's main science topic, let me see if I have other topics. No, I'm going to go right into the Hale-Bopp issue tonight. In a couple weeks, I've been trying to get this topic up and going. Last week, I ran out of time. So I'm going to concentrate nearly the whole show on this topic. In summary, the official story on Hale-Bopp is that it did not have a companion. There was nothing there. There was no companion. When NASA first released its photos on the Internet, it was back in 1995, and I know we have in the archives, we have that captured. And it shows the main nucleus and coma and comet part of Hale-Bopp. And out around it is swinging this other comet. It's swinging around, and you can see that. It looks like a big pinwheel. NASA quickly pulled that down off the Internet. But as I said, that's been captured. And it does exist in our archives. But the point is, clearly something was orbiting Hale-Bopp. Two photographs were placed on the Art Bell webpage. They came from totally independent sources. One was from a guy named Chuck Schrammick, a talk show host from Houston, Texas, and Chuck had interviewed me many times on his radio program. There's an interview with Chuck as host and me as guest. It's still on my webpage. And when you listen to this, you would think it was today in the year 2012. This interview was, I believe, 1996, something like that. And it's a great interview where Chuck is interviewing me regarding comet things and my comet science research, etc. I believe if you scroll all the way down on the home page, then there's a link there to one of the early links to radio archives. It's not the main radio archive, weekly radio archive link. It's way down at the bottom of the homepage. But you can catch that interview with Chuck Schrammick. But anyway, Chuck, with his home backyard telescope equipment, took a picture of Hale-Bopp and saw the companion there. Independently, Courtney Brown, a guy who is right now still current, he's still around in the talk show circuits. I don't personally have any contact, never had any personal contact with Courtney Brown. And he has an institute where he still does his research, and that's neither here nor there. But the point is that eventually Chuck Schrammick died mysteriously, a very rapid death, they said, from cancer. And I always thought that they pulled the plug on Chuck. Somebody went in and offed him. And that was part of this whole series of people that were killed, obviously, related to the Hale-Bopp era and Planet X-type topics. But anyway, be that as it may, Chuck took a picture of Hale-Bopp showing clearly the companion. And then Courtney Brown received photos. We now know they came from the University of Hawaii, Ali Hainau and company, which showed the companion. And this was a secret transmission of that photo to Courtney, and he was going to use it to try to see, he had the remote viewing, tried to remote view to see if this was an alien or anything to do with aliens or what exactly was the nature of the companion. Courtney posted this picture with Art Bell, who put it on his webpage. So we have two completely independent sources of photo showing the same companion getting to Art Bell and being posted on the Art Bell webpage. This is where Art Bell all of a sudden got into a lot, had a lot of problems, and eventually lost his radio show over this. I was on his show in about 1996, it might have been 97 by then, and on the air explained to Art that he had been had, and that there was, in fact, a companion to Hale-Bopp. Now, the follow-up was that NASA hit the national news claiming that the photos were faked. And started Chuck Schrammick's life was basically destroyed. He had hate phone calls. He had to move after a while, and eventually he died this mysterious death of rapid onset lower back cancer, the same exact death or cause of death as Robert Harrington, the head of the Naval Observatory, who never completed his work regarding Hale-Bopp. So these are somewhat related, I would say. But at any rate, I'm talking about the companion. I want to concentrate on this topic of the companion of Hale-Bopp. So after the Heaven Gate 39 people commit suicide, which, by the way, was not a suicide, it was a murder. There was a mole, somebody went in and poisoned those people, that's very clear. And everybody who knew anything about Heaven's Gate, they were a very clean living group of people. They were made out to be a cult, a bunch of crazies that killed themselves so they could go off to the comet and the aliens and be reborn again. This is the story that is put out there today. Wikipedia today gives the story that the photos of Chuck Schrammick and Courtney Brown were faked and that there was no companion. But, oops, wait a minute. Wait just a minute. In the Canary Island Hale-Bopp conference that occurred, I believe, in 2007, it was called the first Hale-Bopp conference, the first international conference on Comet Hale-Bopp, held in Puerto de la Cruz, Tenerife, Spain, which is in the Canary Islands. The second topic on the agenda, detection of a satellite orbiting the nucleus of Comet Hale-Bopp by Z. Sekanina Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Oh, there was a companion. NASA discovered it, And it was the second topic of many, many invited papers at the 1998. That was just after 97. It was February 2 to 5, 1998, Tenerife, Spain, in the Canary Islands, the first international conference on Comet Hale-Bopp. NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory scientist Z. Sekenina shows that there was a detected satellite orbiting the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. Interesting. And the first paper on the agenda, interestingly enough, was a guy by Hal Weaver, Holly Hainaut's buddy over at the University of Hawaii, and estimating the size of Hale-Bopp's nucleus. Now, then the very first paper on the list was a guy named Brian Marsden, The Orbit Determination Evolution of Comet Hale-Bopp. Isn't this interesting? Now, these were all lie papers. First of all, the orbit of Comet Hale-Bopp, when it was first discovered, was on a direct collision course with Earth. NASA never said a word to the public. Eventually, that orbit changed on a daily basis. We collected the ephemeris, which is the orbital data of Hale-Bopp, and oddly enough, it changed on a daily basis over a number of years. Now the official story is that it passed near Jupiter, and that was the cause of its orbital change. Isn't that interesting? When the official story, which Brian Marsden himself posted, I remember having it, I know I have it saved in the archives, said that Comet Hale-Bopp will not have any orbital change because it's too large. It's too large. And at that time, they were talking about a nucleus 40 miles across because they believed that ice balls with a dirty comet snowball, ice ball, whatever, comet, that the jetting that might come off the nucleus would be insignificant and would not perturb the orbit of the nucleus of this comet. But Hale-Bopp defied NASA's dirty snowball once again. And what's going on? The orbit was changing on a daily basis. So to solidify the cover story, the lie, the NASA lie that would be presented to the public, etc., Brian Marsden coined the concept that Hale-Bopp's orbit was changed by a near passage to Jupiter. And you'll still find that scattered around the internet wherever they talk about it. So the first couple papers out of the chute at the Canary Island Conference are cover papers covering lies. So how does the official story that there was no companion, that the pictures of Chuck Schrammick and the one released by Courtney Brown to Art Bell, that those were faked? And additionally, I know we have the archive of this. In fact, I'll see if I can get permission sometime to play it. It's the show in about 1996 or 7 by that time. It was probably 1997, because I believe I talked about the Canary Island Conference coming up, to which, by the way, I had been originally invited to give a talk. And so, in fact, let me divert for just a second here. Here it is. We are in 1997, and this is a paper that was written and posted on the internet. And it basically summarizes my interaction with that Canary Island Conference. And, of course, I was very active. Let me read this. It says, the rejected submission of James M. McCanney, the Canary Island Hale-Bopp Conference, 1998. It was early in 1997, it was announced by the European Space Agency that there would be a conference held in the Canary Islands to elicit and discuss ideas and discoveries concerning the great comet Hale-Bopp. A call for papers was announced. James McCanney submitted an abstract to several of the organizers of the event. Below are two examples of the typical responses he received. Is science unbiased? We will let the reader decide that fine point. Okay, so here we go. I wrote a submission, and I'll read that quickly, just bits and pieces of it because it's rather long. I'll read that submission. It's called the Plasma Discharge Comet Model. And, okay, and it was submitted in LaTeX format, which was the required format, and I'm adept at submitting these forms in exactly the correct format, so there's no glitch, it can't be rejected because of a technicality. So anyway, my abstract was submitted in LaTeX format and requesting an oral presentation at the Canary Island Hale-Bopp Conference, which would be coming up, as I said, in early 1998. So this is back, flashback to 1997. I'll read my abstract here in a second and submission. Here's the response I got from Mark Kidger of the European Space Agency and his response to my request. He says, Jim, I've passed your message to Richard West. We have not sent out formal second mailing because the conference poster is not ready yet. The SOC debated long and hard on the invited papers and decided to invite speakers formally before sending out the announcement. There is still a lot of time available for contributed papers, so you can still make an important contribution to the conference. Okay, so very positive note. I'm the first person really to respond to that of all of the scientists, and so I'm the first person on the list to be included in the Canary Island Hale-Bopp Conference that's coming up about a year later. Just a quick reading of my abstract. It's Jam McCanny. Plasma Discharge Comet Model is the title. It says an alternative comet model that was developed circa 1979, which predicted the existence of X-rays to the sunward side of comet nuclei, among other effects not anticipated in theory by the Dirty Snowball Comet Model. Okay, so you can imagine this goes on. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs. Let me just read the last paragraph. Plasma discharge effects are observable for any moving object moving in a non-uniform plasma. In this case, the non-uniform plasma is generated as a natural byproduct of any object undergoing fusion. Other observable effects include the interaction of galaxies, ARP galaxies, the space shuttle glow, electric charging of near-Earth orbiting satellites, and related effects around asteroids which exhibit halos. The effects of observed when comet Schumacher-Levy 9 entered Jupiter's realm were in fact predicted and explained almost 20 years ago. Okay, so anyway, it's a long abstract submitted to give an oral presentation at the Canary Island Hale-Bopp Conference. Here's the final letter. It comes back from Richard West, the European Space Agency. Says, Dear Mr. McCanny, thank you for your various emails concerning your submitted abstract. I am sorry that it has not been possible to answer before. Due to the large number of submissions to this conference and the correspondingly time-consuming work that had to be done by the members of the SOC, that's the planning committee. The SOC has received a very large number of excellent proposals for presentations, and it has been a very difficult task to assign the limited number of available slots for oral presentations. Indeed, it has been impossible to accommodate all of those that really deserved it. I regret to inform you that the SOC, after careful scrutiny of the abstract you submitted, and in view of the citation described above, has decided that it will not be possible to accept your proposed paper for an oral presentation. So anyway, gee, and do you think I would have talked about the fact that NASA publicly was denying that there was a companion? That would have been one of the first things out of my mouth. And the other thing was that NASA clearly had the paper, the third paper on the agenda was the second NINA paper showing that there was a companion. and asking for NASA to go back to the public and tell them that, in fact, there was a companion. NASA discovered it. They studied it, etc. And all of this activity on Hale-Bopp. Now, let me insert something here, that NASA claimed publicly that they never took a single photo of the comet Hale-Bopp. That includes with the Hubble Space Telescope. We found, through research of people that were working associated with me at the time, that NASA contracts that millions of photos of Hale-Bopp were taken with the Hubble Space Telescope. Not a single one of them was ever made public, and NASA denies that it took any pictures at all. What an interesting situation. Why all the denial? Why all the lies? Why all the cover-ups? So at any rate, and by the way, this is kind of interesting. If you do a Google search, which is the basically the government-controlled search engine, and you do a search on the following. It says Canary Island Hale-Bopp Conference. Just do a Google search on that, and interestingly enough, the information about me and the rejected submission is fourth on the list. That includes the three government ahead of me are the three main government websites dealing with this topic, and then the fourth result of this search is the issue of my paper being rejected. By the way, a guy named Michael Ahern, another one of the NASA Tier 2 front liars, one of the dirty snowball comet model scientists, has a book out called The Proceedings of the First International Conference on Hale-Bopp, held in the Canary Islands, February 2-5, 1998. So the proceedings of that conference are on, you can get that book. You can actually trace that down. So this information is available. But the point of my show here is that Hale-Bopp had a companion. NASA knew from the very beginning it had a companion. It hid the data showing that Hale-Bopp had a companion. Why would NASA hide data related to the companion? Well, first of all, it would allow anybody with basic astronomical knowledge to do the following. You could, given the position and the angle of the photo, the angular coverage of the photo, you could determine the distance between the companion and Hale-Bopp. Then, secondly, you could determine using the timing of the time-lapse photography, you could determine the orbital period of the companion, and that would take you about two or three frames to do that. It wouldn't take very long. It wouldn't take a lot of data to do that. And with that, you could determine with a small equation that's well known in astronomy or in physics, that you could determine the central mass of the nucleus of Hale-Bopp. Why would NASA not want you to know that? Well, it was planet-sized, and it had a companion. Now, the second paper, the Hal Weaver paper here, estimating the size of Hale-Bopp's nucleus, as I said, was one of the first papers at the Canary Island Conference. One of the biggest lies of NASA has always been the size of cometary nucleus, of course, with all kinds of other properties, not the least of which is they've never discovered an ounce of water on any comet nucleus that they've ever approached with cameras, with satellites that would come near and measure properties of comets. Including temperature, surface composition. What was the surface composition of one comet nucleus? Carbon, hydrocarbons, oil, baked on at high temperature. Not a drop of water, not a drop of ice. It's that hot, black hydrocarbon form of ice, apparently. never have detected any water or ice, yet it's a dirty snowball. It's a fluffy little harmless thing that's a few feet across and couldn't do any damage to anything. So you see, the Hale-Bopp conference, the last person on the planet or in this part of the solar system that they wanted at that meeting was me, to basically monitor what they're saying and then to call out all the lies that were being purported. With Brian Marsden, the first paper on the list, I would have showed him the daily ephemeris, showing the change that occurred over years, not just during a close approach to Jupiter, the changes in the orbit of Hale-Bopp. With the Fitzsimmons paper from Queen's University in the UK, I would have brought out the early footage of the NASA first releases of Hale-Bopp, showing that it in fact was a very large comet. The third paper, estimating the size of Hale-Bopp's nucleus, Hal Weaver, Department of Physics, Johns Hopkins University, I would have shown that in fact the nucleus of Hale-Bopp was planetary in size, and NASA knew this from the very beginning. That's why they hid the data. And then last but not least, the detection of a satellite orbiting the nucleus of Comet Hale-Bopp. Jay Sekanina, a guy whose name shows up a lot in Tier 2 science regarding the Dirty Snowball Comet model, from JPL, showing that, in fact, yes, Hale-Bopp did have a companion. It was known, and it was discussed. The fourth paper on the list here, at the first international conference on Hale-Bopp, yet on Wikipedia, in all of the articles that you read regarding Chuck Schrammick, all of the trash that's out on the internet, and by the way, Schrammick is spelled S-H-R-A-M-E-K, and his webpage has been removed from the internet, and I don't know why. I believe a family member was maintaining it for some time, but it is gone now. It had a picture of him there. And basically just a remembrance of Chuck. But you can still see the pictures that Chuck submitted to Art Bell. Of course, Art Bell later became under siege, and all kinds of things happened where obviously the government and government agent types were harassing him personally. And basically it all started about the time when this Hale-Bopp issue occurred. He was publicly accused, as well as Chuck Schrammick, of being the cause of the murder of 39 people, the Heaven's Gate people, because he published false photographs of the companion of Hale-Bopp. He was accused of being the source in the newspapers, in the press, in all the remaining stories on Wikipedia, etc. He was accused of being posting the Chuck Schrammick photos, which NASA still claims in public were falsified. Clearly, and I get a kick out of this, Alan Hale, who's got a lot of mileage out of discovering Hale-Bopp, said that Chuck's computer software was bad and miscalibrated, and therefore he was looking at an eighth magnitude star. An obviously absolutely ridiculous statement, given the fact that at the Hale-Bopp Canary Island conference, NASA publicly said the fourth paper on the list is showing the discovery of the Hale-Bopp companion. So it's funny, but it's not funny. We're dealing with extremely serious business here. The fact that NASA still maintains and doesn't come clean in public that it faked the photos. Now remember, NASA had the Holly Einow and Al Weaver from the pictures that were taken of Hale-Bopp. The early pictures that were taken of Hale-Bopp from the Hawaii big telescopes in Hawaii that were given to Courtney Brown, they later took another set of photos with those same telescopes and removed the companion And those are the ones they issued to the press, showing that there was no companion to Hale Bopp. So these guys publicly faked photos, released them, and then accused Art Bell of the murder of 39 people. This is NASA. This is your buddies at NASA, right there. And then the fact that also Hale Bopp was on a direct collision course with Earth. NASA knew it at that time, 1995, 6, 7. I was still on a talking communication basis with the people at Goddard Space Flight Center, more so than JPL, but more at Goddard. I could call up, pick up the phone, and talk to the people there. And the point is that they knew that Hale Bopp, number one, was big, physically big, and they knew it was on a direct collision course with Earth. Over the period of a couple years, the orbit of Hale Bopp changed. It slowed down, and so Earth moved ahead in its orbit, and the orbit of Hale Bopp changed from about a 4,200-year orbit to about a 2,600-year orbit. And that's pretty much where it when the Hale Bopp left the solar system. I don't have a final reading on what the final orbit of Hale Bopp was as it went out of the solar system. But the fact that the orbit of Hale Bopp is proof, 100% proof, that my theory, plasma discharge comet model, is correct, and the dirty snowball comet model, which Brian Marsden said that initially, he said Hale Bopp will not have any significant orbital changes because the nucleus is too big. And then when it started changing on a daily basis, the only thing they could do is create a lie that Jupiter did it. Well, Jupiter didn't do it. Jupiter may have had a small effect, but let's flash back 4,200 years when Hale Bopp was here the last time. It had a significant interaction with the planet Jupiter. And that's exactly the same time that I said, and I have stated publicly, that I believe that Venus, the comet, was captured by Jupiter. That's the Venus event. That's when Venus was born of Zeus. That is what was later brought up in Mayan mythology, in Roman and Greek and ancient Egyptian mythology, in Chinese, in all of the ancient histories from around the world, India. All of the ancient civilizations talked about the comet that was captured by Jupiter, but they didn't know it was captured. All they knew was that Jupiter was brightening, and that's about the same time. And if you look in the Colbran, you see that there were multiple big comets in the solar system at that time. The very first parts of the Colbran talk about the renewal of man. And they talk about the big comets, the multiple big comets doing war in the heavens. And so it's very clear to me that Hale Bopp got flipped up and around the sun and went down out of the solar system and bye-bye, only to come back in the year 1995, start entering the solar system when it was first discovered publicly. And by the way, that's when Schumacher, clearly, and all those people back then, I think, had data. But what's interesting, and I said this on a show a few weeks ago, is that Schumacher, Gene Schumacher, died mysteriously. I think he was murdered in 1997. And that was 2 years after Hale Bopp had been discovered. So it's very clear that Schumacher had information on another object, another big object coming in from the south. After the strange situation over Schumacher's death in the outback of Australia, his observatory burned to the ground out in Australia with all of the materials in it. And so, in other words, I believe he had information on another big object that was coming in from the south. And the Harrington situation, where Harrington's work was never continued. You can look up the Harrington contract with NASA. that extended all the way through the 1980s into the early 1990s. The name of the contract, NASA contract with the Naval Observatory, was the search for Planet X. It was very clearly down and below, and the reason they knew it was down in that particular part of the solar system was because it was pulling down on the planets Uranus and Neptune. It's very clear in that abstract that they had taken data, they were going to continue to take data, and they were fully confident that that's where Planet X was. And they called it specific with a capital P. So they were talking about one specific object, Planet X with a capital P. And they were confident that in the next April viewing session in New Zealand under this NASA contract, that Harrington would be able to identify not only the picture of Planet X, but its orbit. And so that was like 1992, before Hale-Bopp had been discovered. At any rate, it appears, and since the fact that Schumacher was, I believe, murdered after the discovery of Hale-Bopp, there was still another bigger thing coming in after Hale-Bopp. Things move very slowly out there. So the question is there something still lurking in that part of the solar system? If they come in, they can come in and move very quickly. Now, I want to also mention that right now on the Internet, there is a plethora. There's absolutely just a blaze of misinformation. People claiming that, oh, here's Planet X. It's over here in Leo. It's over there. It's up there. So far I have yet to see any substantiated, legitimate information on Planet X. A lot of this is just, and it's like the old flak situation in World War II. As you went around or airplanes do this to confuse radar. You throw a lot of flak or metal shrapnel out of an airplane, and then it confuses the radar. It can't see or pinpoint the aircraft sufficiently to shoot it down. And so that's the same thing that's going on with misinformation regarding Planet X. When Hale-Bopp, just to complete that thought, the amount of misinformation on the Internet today regarding Planet X is staggering, and the purpose of that is to confuse the public, to throw out flack. The Vatican currently has three major telescopes all designed to look for comets. Father Malachi Martin, when he was on the Art Bell show, said that the question that the Vatican raised to the observatory, and I knew some of the astronomers that worked in the original first Vatican Observatory in Arizona, they were comet astronomers, and that all of these telescopes are designed specifically to look at comets. It's a very different design of telescope, not the kind you would look at planets or stars or anything in deep space. These are very specific, big telescopes only designed to look at comets. What's the Vatican interest in comets? And Malachi Martin said that before he was murdered, that the Vatican raised the question when Hale-Bopp first showed up, called up NASA and said, is this wormwood? In other words, is this Nibiru? And so I never heard a response to that question, but as far as I can tell, Hale-Bopp was not Nibiru. It was on a collision course with Earth, but of course anybody who knows anything about my plasma discharge comet model would show that, yes, it would change its orbit, and unpredictably, but at a very steady rate. So there again, back to the Canary Island Conference, you see how ultimately it important is. The first things on that conference agenda were lies. This is Brian Marsden, liar for NASA. Orbital determination and evolution of comet C-1995-01 Hale-Bopp to make and create the lie that would be sustained regarding Hale-Bopp and its orbital changes. Okay, the second thing, early observations of Hale-Bopp, smoothing it out so that all of the early observations of Hale-Bopp were basically swept under the rug so the public would never see them. Paper number three, Hal Weaver, the same guy that sent the fake photos to the newspapers along with Ollie Hynow, trying to cover NASA's tracks regarding the companion. His paper, The Estimated Size of the Hale-Bopp Nucleus. And there again, lie number three, that the nucleus of Hale-Bopp was only about under 40 miles across. And they're going, wow, that's big. Remember in the Comet Lovejoy, the stupid, ridiculous video that NASA put out saying that comets are usually about 10 feet across, but this was a whopping 200 meters across. And what a ridiculous, ridiculous statement, given the fact that you can see on the SOHO images, you can see the planet nucleus of Comet Lovejoy coming around the other side of the sun, and it's bigger than the planet Mercury. Lie number four of the first International Conference on Comet Hale-Bopp, the fact that NASA, it's the Zeccanina paper, detection of a satellite orbiting the nucleus of Comet Hale-Bopp, and but still maintaining publicly the lie that there was no companion, not retracting it, and not retracting the damage that was done to Chuck Schrammick, Art Bell, and the cover-up of the 39 people who absolutely, without question, were murdered, and then called a bunch of crazy cultists the Heaven's Gate. By the way, they were called Heaven's Gate because they were building firewalls and encryption software that the government could not break into. And that's a whole other part of that story. But at any rate, they were already on the government bad list, if you want to put it that way. So whatever happened to the companion of Hale-Bopp? Well, some people think that NASA did have information that there was alien contact at Hale-Bopp. Secondly, there was a physical companion that kept orbiting inwards and inwards until it finally was assimilated. So if you look in the videos early on the first year or two of Hale-Bopp, you see that pulsing. Of the and vibrating of the comet coma. That is the nucleus spinning around, and finally it became part of the main nucleus of Comet Hale-Bopp. I'm out of time, but just remember to go to the webpage jmccsci.com. Your purchases help support this radio show and the information that's ongoing. It comes out so and helps all of you. So once again, the website jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.